That's odd.
The God King went to stand over Kyler's corpse.
Where's the Kakari? I sense it's in his body?
Yes.
Fascinating. I don't suppose you know what all it does.
To her horror, V found herself answering. It hadn't been a direct question, so she veered as hard as she could.
No, I know it makes him invisible.
She tried to say made, but she couldn't force the past tense into the sentence. She hoped he didn't notice.
Well, regardless, your lover will have to wait. I have a massacre to attend.
V grabbed Kyler's sword. Gareth watched her curiously. The sword swung in an arc, then stopped. She stopped it herself. She couldn't do it.
Amazing, isn't it? Funny thing is, I learned compulsion from one of your southern mating rituals. Ringing. But you people completely misunderstood its true power. Anyway, feel free to watch the battle. And stop grunting, dear. It's unbecoming.
Abruptly, his eyes went vacant. V tried to move the sword, but it was impossible. The compulsion was undeniable. As the witches released the Ferali, V sat on the steps before the throne to watch, but even that terrible spectacle couldn't hold her attention. She should have given up long ago. All her fighting was a farce. She'd done everything the God King had wanted her to do. She'd killed Jarl, and she'd killed Kyler. In the years to come, she'd doubtless kill hundreds more, thousands. It wouldn't matter. No one else could ever mean what Jarl and Kyler had meant to her. Jarl, her only friend, dead by her hand. Kyler, a man who had somehow stirred, what, passion? Maybe just warmth in a cold heart. A man who could have been more. She hated every man she'd ever known. It was man's nature to kill, to destroy, to tear down. Woman was the giver of life, the nurturer. And yet, Kyler. He stood athwart her suppositions like a colossus. Kyler, the legendary wet boy who should have been the very quintessence of destruction, had saved a little girl, adopted her, saved a woman, saved nobles who didn't deserve saving, and tried to leave the bitter business.
Would have left it too, if not for me.
If not for V, Kyler would have been in Carnarvon, leading some sort of daylight life that V couldn't even imagine. And what was it with Aline? Kyler could have had any woman he wanted, and he'd chosen a girl covered with scars. In her experience, men went for the hottest bitch they could get their cock in. If the bitch was hot, they didn't care that she was a bitch. Kyler wasn't like that. V had an awful flash of intuition. She saw Aline, a woman she'd never met, as her twin and opposite. Aline had scars an inch deep, but beneath that, she was all beauty and grace and love. V was all ugliness, except for the thin veil of her skin. Kyler's love was a mystery no more. The man who could see past Jarl's murder could easily see past a few scars. Of course he loved Aline, or had, before V killed him. Kyler had said he would come back, but he wouldn't come back. The God King had won. V pulled her knife out of Kyler's back and rolled him over. His eyes were open, blank, dead. She closed those accusing eyes, pulled his head into her lap, and turned to watch the God King massacre Sanaria's last hope. All pretense of scholastic detachment was gone. At first, the Magi had to strain to see the Ferali. It entered the battle virtually unnoticed.
The Culkin was right. I thought he made it up.
We all thought he made it up. What does this mean about all those other creatures in his writings?
Gods, it's just like he said. It's being written, possessed.
On the battlefield, the beast's presence was becoming known. It had become a great bull plowing through the lines of Sanarians. Whatever gashes the soldiers managed to inflict were quickly filled, and the creature grew. The enormous bull lumbered out the side of the Caladoran line. Half a dozen men, some still alive, were stuck to the beast. It paused as it digested them and began rearranging itself. The Ferali curled into a ball and sheets of plate metal bobbed to the surface of its skin. It unfolded itself and stood. The Ferali now wore the shape of a troll. It was three times the height of a man. Its skin was armor and mail and gawping little mouths. It had even taken into itself the swords and spears of its dead opponents, which now bristled from its back and sides. The Cenarian's first reaction was surprisingly heroic. They charged the beast. It was futile. It beat its way through the lines, never moving so fast that the Caladoran line couldn't close behind it. And everywhere it went, killing, it was careful to lift every man it had killed or maimed in one of its forearms and stick him to its skin or impale him on the spears on its back. One would be devoured, and then the next, and the next, and the next. Never slowing, it tore apart line after line. In the face of that inexorable death, General Agon charged part of the Caladoran line with everything he had, trying to escape. By luck or leadership, hundreds of his men joined him, all attacking one place, desperate. The Caladoran line bowed and nearly broke, but the Caladoran prince Moburu's cavalry reinforced the line until the Ferali waded through the ranks to get there. Abruptly, the charge broke off, and the Cenarian generals tried to get their men to charge another way, but the din of battle, the confusion of being ringed by Caladorans, and the terror at the ever-enlarging beast was too much. The Cenarians were fighting in a desperate frenzy. They were moments away from panic.
We have to go help them!
The Magi looked at Jaden like he was insane.
What? We're some of the most powerful Magi in the world. If we don't help them, they'll die. If we don't oppose Caladorn now, it'll be too late.
Jaden, the Ferali is almost impervious to magic. And that was to the ancients. It's already too late.
Lord Lucius was in no mood to placate the youth.
We were sent to find word of the Great Sword. If Kurok is here, believe me, Jaden, we will know of it presently. If the Cenarians have it, they will use it now. The Council...
The Council isn't here!
You think is irrelevant. We will not fight. That's final. Understood.
Jaden's jaw clenched with the effort of holding back words he would be made to regret. He turned his eyes back to the men dying because of Lord Lucius's apathy.
Understood, sir.
One thing the stories never mentioned about battles, the stories Logan had loved so much as a boy, was the smell. He thought that after the whole, nothing could ever shock him again. But he was wrong. He'd lost count of the men he'd seen die in the hole, but whatever the number was, 12, 15, it was nothing compared with the number dead here in the first charge alone. The smell had been excitement and fear and rain and mud, insignificant smells next to the sights of flashing steel and proud horses, the fierce faces of the women who rode with him. The Caladorans had hemmed them in. Without flags or hand signals to communicate with distant commanders, the Cenarians couldn't escape. If too few joined a charge, it went nowhere. If too many, they'd be massacred from the rear. The Cenarian army was paralyzed, and more Caladorans emerged. From where? Why the hell hadn't they known they were there? Had Luke Grayson blown his assignment, or had he betrayed them? It didn't matter now. Only avoiding slaughter mattered, and the stench filled his nostrils. If it weren't for the order, Logan would have died in the first charge. They fought with nearly suicidal frenzy to be at his side, and they'd paid the price for it. Of the 30 women who'd ridden with him, only 10 remained. With such a small bodyguard, Logan surely would have been overwhelmed had not more than 100 men joined them in the minutes after the first charge. Agon's dogs. He'd given them words, and now they had given him their lives. Logan couldn't have said how long it was into the battle when a new smell cut through the ranks. It was something rancid, which made no sense. Tonight, the armies would leave plenty of meat on the field to rot, but nothing should be rotten yet. He heard and felt the Cenarians reacting long before he saw the source of their newest fear. Then, on the back of his horse, he saw what looked like a bull the height of a destrier, blasting through the lines and out on the battle, dragging men with it. A different creature returned. It was a troll, with four arms, four eyes, lumpy grayish skin, and blades sticking out of its back. Logan knew that he should have been afraid, and part of him marveled that he wasn't. Fear simply wasn't there. Battle became simple. One understanding that led to one fact. That creature was killing his people. He had to stop it.
Charge!
General Agon led another charge. His men smashed into the cavalry like a balsa hammer on an anvil. It was all Agon could do to break away from that damned cavalry officer with the Ledeshian skin and Alataran clothes and horses. Logan charged at the beast. It seemed to be even bigger now. One entire arm now was a scythe blade, and the troll swept it across the field about 3 feet above the ground, reaping a full harvest. There was no way to dodge. Some men jumped and others dove to the ground, but most were cut in half. The troll moved forward, arms lifting the dead and impaling them on the lances and swords that studded its body. Logan rode into the space created as the Cenarians pushed back, as far back from the troll as they could. His white charger danced nervously. The troll stopped and regarded Logan. A human head pushed out of the troll's belly.
Logan!
The head pushed further out of the troll's stomach toward Logan.
Asul!
There's something you should know about Janine.
Logan hadn't been strong when the battle began. Months of privation had left him emaciated and weak. He'd survived today on luck and the ferocity of the Order of the Garter and Agon's dogs, not his own strength or skill, but at the passage of Janine's name across this beast's foul tongue. Logan felt the power of righteous rage.
Your lovely, lovely wife is ours.
For a moment, the beast froze. It didn't move a muscle. Then the troll raised its arms to the skies. Two of its eyes fixed on Logan, and the enormous bone scythe drew back. V brushed back Kyler's hair with gentle fingers. Before them, the Ferali had transformed into a troll and was wading through the Cenarian lines. She barely saw it. She was staring at Kyler's dead face. For the first time, she realized how young he looked. Kyler was serene, beatific. V had murdered him. She delivered immortality to the God King. Something splashed on his cheek. V blinked.
What the hell?
The drop slid down his cheek to his ear. She blinked again, more rapidly, refusing to believe she was crying. What had Sister Ariel said? something about being an emotional cripple? V looked at her tear, glimmering on Kyler's ear, and wiped it away.
That bitch called me stupid.
And so she was. Her finger froze. It hit V like a war horse at a full gallop. She hadn't escaped Sister Ariel at all. Suddenly, V couldn't breathe. She saw the sister's trap now, laid out for her in every word Ariel had spoken. She saw the bait and the consequences. It wasn't escape, but it was escape from the God King. It only required V to do something worse to Kyler than anything Hugh Gibbet had ever done to her. She put an unsteady hand into a pouch and found the box right where she'd put it. She opened the box and looked at the Wadrener wedding rings tucked inside. If she did this, it would be like rape, and V knew rape. Yet, it was the only way. Sister Ariel had the Niles plant all the information V would need. They'd told her she needed to show an outward sign of an inward change to break the compulsion, a transfer of loyalties. They talked of the powerful magic in some of the old rings, but how they held a type of compulsion spell. And the bitch witch had dangled the carrot herself. Quick advancement, private tutoring, being important. V didn't care. She wouldn't do this for herself. She'd do it because if she didn't, the God King would become immortal. V would become his pet assassin, a one-woman plague, slaying any who dared defy him. She'd do this for those poor bastards getting eaten alive on the battlefield. She'd do this because if she didn't, Kyler would die, truly die. But he would never forgive her. She ran her fingers through Kyler's hair. His face looked cold and still, judgmental. She would escape. She would change. But Kyler and Aline would pay the price. The earring pierced her left ear, and the hoop melded together seamlessly. Pain made her eyes water. Tears streaming down her face, she pierced the other ring through Kyler's ear. A rush of warmth lit her from head to toe. She felt the compulsion shrivel and burst apart. There was nothing compared to the sudden longing she felt. In her very skin, her stomach, her spine, she felt Kyler. He was healing, but he was hurt so badly it made her ache. Her fingers tingled where she was touching his face. He was more handsome than ever. She wanted him to know her. She wanted to confess the truth and be forgiven and have him love her back. She wanted him to hold her, to touch her cheek, to run his fingers through her hair, and that thought exploded against everything she'd ever known. V pushed Kyler roughly out her lap and staggered to her feet. The rush of emotion was too much, too intense, too vast to read, yet it didn't feel alien, it didn't feel counterfeit. It felt like her love was being purified, the coal blown on so that it flared up into fire. She could hardly bear to look at Kyler, but she was free. The compulsion was gone. Free, free of the God King. On the floor, a lone horseman stood in front of the massive troll. V took her dagger and staggered toward her father. She grabbed his body and made him stand. She shook him.
Father! Father!
Someone was screaming. Who the hell was screaming that on the battlefield? A moment later, Gareth realized what it must be and brought his consciousness back to the throne room. Logan could wait a few seconds. To hell with him if he didn't want to know Janine was alive.
Father! Can you tell me one thing?
I'm right in the middle of something. Do you mind?
Did you make me kill Jarl? Was it compulsion?
Gareth smiled. The lie came easy to his lips.
No, Mulina. You did that yourself.
Oh.
Gareth grinned and slid back into the Ferali. Gareth roared toward the heavens and brought his scythe arm back. Logan rode straight at him until his horse shied. Logan kicked and sawed at the reins, but the horse refused to obey. As Gareth swung the enormous scythe at a level to cut Logan in half, one of the mounted witch hunters burst into the clearing and leapt out of his saddle, tackling Logan. The scythe swept through both horses' necks, and the beasts went crashing to the earth in twin sprays of blood. Logan rolled away and got to his feet. Beside him, the archer was already drawing an arrow. He shot one of Gareth's eyes and then another. Logan was standing, defiant but defenseless. Gareth's next slash would tear the little man in half. Something hot went into his back. Once, twice, three times, again and again. He lifted the Ferali's hands to its back, wondering what could pierce his thick hide, wondering why his other eyes hadn't seen the attack. But there were no arrows or spears in his back. The Ferali was fading. And as Logan charged at him to stick his sword in his belly, Gareth realized it wasn't the Ferali that was bleeding. He was. Suddenly, he was back in the throne room. V was hugging him against her breast and stabbing him again and again against herself, as if she wished the dagger would go all the way through him into her own heart. Gareth told his limbs to move, but they were empty slabs of meat. His body was dying. Dying! And his vision was going black. Black. He triggered the death spell. The veer ripped from his arms and engulfed V in a forest of black fingers. They pulled her closer. He was close. It was working. He could feel it. And then, every finger of veer was sheared off by an iridescent blade passing between Gareth and V. The veer, cut off from their source, froze, cracked, and evaporated into black smoke. Gareth turned and saw the impossible. Kyla was alive. He stood with judgment writ on every feature and a blade of black Kakari in his fist. Realization swept through Gareth like a tidal wave. The devourer devoured life itself. The sustainer sustained life itself. It was not just extended life or healing. It was true immortality. Gareth had had a chance for real godhood, and he let it slip right through his fingers. Impotent rage washed through him. Then Kyla's Kakari blade descended once more toward his head. Logan rammed his sword into the troll's belly, and the creature rocked back. It dropped to its knees as if it had suddenly lost all coordination. He wasn't sure what had just happened, but it didn't seem that the troll's reaction was right. Logan had seen it take worse wounds and not even flinch. Both armies' eyes were fixed on Logan and the beast. As it was still on its knees, the plates covering most of the beast's stomach slid out to its sides. From a gap between the plates, something pressed out against the skin, bulging and glooping. In another second, the form resolved itself. Pushed out from the troll's stomach, like a bas relief, was a woman. Her face worked and a mouth appeared.
I can't fight it, King. So hungry. Just like in the hole. I can't stop, King. Look at what they made me. It won't let me kill me, King! So hungry! Like the bread! So hungry!
Lily! I thought it was Gareth!
He's gone! Dead! Tell me what to do, King! I can't stop me! I'm so hungry! It's eating myself!
Logan realized that even in the time since Gareth Ursul's face had protruded from it, the troll had shrunk. It was devouring itself. He had to do something fast. They couldn't kill it. The beast healed its wounds without even conscious thought, and now the form of Lily was becoming indistinct.
Lily! Lily, listen to me!
She rallied, and her form protruded once more, though this time without a mouth.
Lily! Eat the Caladorans! Eat them all and run up into the mountains! All right?
But she was gone. The plate snapped back into place and the troll lumbered to its feet. It fixed its eyes on Logan and raised its scythe, all trace of Lily gone. Logan walked straight toward it.
You wanted to make things right, Lily! You remember, Lily? You wanted to earn your pardon, Lily! Am I your king or not?
The Ferali blinked. Logan pointed at the Caladorans.
Go! Kill them! I command it!
Then in a movement faster than any Garrett had ever made, it slashed an arm through the Caladorans behind it. Logan turned and saw thousands of pairs of eyes locked on him in disbelief. Logan Gaia, the man who commanded a Ferali to stop, and it did. The battle had come to a standstill. Caladorans and Cenarians stood within easy reach of each other and didn't fight. The Ferali, easily 30 feet tall now, commanded all attention. It didn't turn. It merely went gelatinous for a moment. And then, what had been its front was its back, and it was facing the Caladorans. A fireball arced up from a Meister, and it ricocheted off its skin harmlessly. Lightning hit an instant later and barely left a black mark on its skin. The Ferali crouched and flexed every muscle in its body. All the arms and armor that Garrett had incorporated in the beast exploded from its body in all directions. The Ferali was unbelievably fast. He began snatching up soldiers like a greedy child snatching sweetmeats. Then the men on both sides remembered the battle. The Cenarians remembered their weapons and the Caladorans remembered their heels. They cast away weapons and shields to run faster. Logan couldn't believe it. The impossibility of it was too much to accept.
Who do you want to go after them?
General Agon and a bloody Duke Weseros had appeared out of nowhere.
No one. She can't tell friend from foe. Our fight is done.
She?
Don't ask!
Agon rode off, and Logan turned to the man who'd tackled him from his horse. He didn't recognize him.
You saved my life. Who are you?
The Sethi woman who'd been stuck to his side for the entire battle, Caldrosa Wynn, stepped up.
My lord, this is my husband, Tommen.
You're a brave man, Tommen, and no mean shot. What boon would you ask?
Tommen looked up, and inexplicably, his eyes shone.
You already gave me back more than I deserve. You gave me back my love, my lord. What's more precious than that?
Tommen extended his hand, and his wife took it. The Cenarian ranks reformed in the tightest squad the generals could manage and just watched as the Caladorans were massacred. There was no retreat. It was a rout. The rest of the circle broke, men running in every direction. The Ferali tore through them. Some crouched behind the sheep fences, some huddled in the lee of boulders, some climbed trees at the edges of the field, but the creature was meticulous in its savagery. It picked up men everywhere, whether alive or dead or wounded or feigning death or hiding or fighting, and devoured them. Not all the Caladorans fled. Some turned and fought. Some rallied their fellows and attacked with more courage than the Cenarians would have believed possible, perhaps more courage than they would have shown themselves. But in the face of that horror, courage was irrelevant. The brave and the cowardly, the high and the low, the good and the bad, died alike. And the Cenarians watched open-mouthed, not one forgetting that the massacre should have been their own. Finally, having devoured the last group large enough to be worth its time, the Ferali fled toward the mountains. Sanaria was either blessed or lucky, or Lily was in better control than Logan had hoped, because it headed in a direction where there were no villages for 100 miles. Logan had been given a new horse and mounted. He turned and was again aware of thousands of eyes on him. Why were they all looking at him?
We won! By God, we won!
The thought wormed its way into Logan's consciousness. They had won. Somehow, against everything, they had won. For the first time in months, Logan felt his mouth curl into a grin. Which noble's flag they had fought under no longer mattered. Agon's dogs embraced Sanaria's city levies. Former thieves and former guards standing together as friends. Nobles stood arm in arm with peasants shouting together. The shattered links binding the country together seemed to be reforming even as Logan looked over the tight-packed army. They had won. The costs had been grievous, but they had stood against the might of a monster and the magic of a god, and they had won. It was audacious, but it was beautiful. Logan looked through the throng for Tara Grayson. She was nowhere to be found, and then he did smile. The dead god fell like a sack of wheat. V was trembling, but she didn't seem to have been harmed by the veer that had wrapped around her. Kyler stared at Gareth Ursul's corpse, disbelieving. Kyler's destiny was dead on the floor, and Kyler hadn't killed him. The wolf had kept his part of the deal. Kyler was alive. But something felt different. V was staring at him, still shaking with emotion, tears still wet and hot on her cheeks. He glanced up and read shock and fear in every line of her body, along with a tinge of hope.
What the hell? Since when can I see what a woman feels?
V was spattered with the God King's blood. It was invisible against the background of her dark, wet boy grays, but there was something terrible about seeing flecks of red wetness splattered in her cleavage. As Kyler looked at her, she was so distraught he wanted to take her into his arms. She needed him to love her, to lead her out of the valley of death that was the Way of Shadows. He knew the way out now. It was love. They'd go find Yuli, and he and V would walk that path together.
Me and V?
Her eyes went wide with fear and remorse. For a split second he wanted to understand, but then his fingers went slowly up to his ear. There was an earring there. A perfect hoop with no opening, and it was swimming with magic so potent he could feel it in his fingertips.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It was the only way.
V turned, and he saw his last gift to Aline, his pledge of love that he had sold his birthright for, sparkling in V's ear.
What have you done?
Kyler could see that his rage was amplified through the earring. As it buffeted her, he could feel her remorse and terror and confusion and desperation and self-loathing and... hells. Her love? Love? How dare she love him? V fled. He didn't follow. What would he do if he caught her? She burst through the main door of the throne room and the guards looked after her, stunned. They turned and saw Kyler standing over the body of the God King. Then it was the charging Highlanders and chanting Meisters. Kyler was glad for the battle. It blotted out a future that would never hold Aline. It took all his attention. With only one hand, killing was actually a challenge. Lantano Garawashi couldn't stop touching the Blade of Heaven, though of course he kept it sheathed. Once a Sakurai drew his sword, he did not sheathe it without first letting it taste blood. As night descended, his men covered the mouth of the cave so the campfires wouldn't be seen by the celebrating Sanarians. After conferring with the spy who'd returned from the Sanarian camp, Garawashi stood up on a ledge. In the firelight, his men's eyes glowed with destiny. They had seen wonders denied to their fathers and grandfathers before them. The Blade of Heaven had returned. Garawashi began without preliminaries, as was his way.
The Cenarians did not win this battle. The creature won it for them. Tonight, they'll drink. Tomorrow, they'll begin hunting down the scattered Calidorians. Do you want to know what we'll be doing while these buffoons swat at flies?
Men nodded. They held the Blade of Heaven. They followed the Garawashi. They were invincible.
Tonight, we will gather the uniforms of the Calidoran dead. At dawn, we will attack and inflict enough losses to infuriate the Cenarians. We will draw their army east, always just slipping through their fingers. And in 3 days, the rest of our army will arrive here. In 5, they'll take the undefended Cenara city. In a month, this country will be ours. In the spring, we will return to Kura and give them their new king. What do you say?
Every man cheered but one. Fir Kasat sat silent, stoic. His face might as well have been carved of marble. Horses' hooves clattered behind Dorian as he came over the last rise in the foothills and saw Kaliras. He stepped aside and waited patiently, enwrapped by the view. The city was still 2 days distant, but between the Faltir Mountains and Mount Thrall, the plain spread broad and flat. The city and the castle rose with the mountains, one lonely spike in an ocean of grazing land. It had once been his home. The party began passing Dorian, riding on magnificent horses. Dorian got down on his knees and gave a peasant's obeisance. It wasn't a normal scouting party, nor were they regular soldiers, though their armor said they were. Their weapons and horses gave them away. The 6 huge soldiers were members of the God King's Guard, and from their smell, despite the half-cloaks, the Meisters accompanying them were actually Verdmeisters. They could only be coming from Cenaria, probably bearing great riches in the few chests they carried. Dorian was stealing brief glimpses when he saw the real treasure. A woman rode with Meisters wearing thick robes, her face veiled. Something seemed oddly familiar about the way she carried herself, and then he saw her eyes. It was the woman he'd foreseen, his future wife. A shiver passed through his whole body, and he remembered bits and pieces of his old prophecies. Something about the process of searing his gift had blocked his memories of them. When he came to himself, he was still kneeling. His muscles were cramped and the sun hung low in the sky. The party was miles ahead of him out on the grasslands. He'd been unconscious for half the day.
Solon, where are you? I need you. I need you here.
But Dorian knew the answer. If Solon had survived Screaming Winds, he was probably already sailing home to Seth to face his lost love. That woman, now Empress Katie Wariamo, would be furious. Because of Dorian's prophecies, Solon had abandoned his homeland in its hour of need. Dorian could only hope that Solon's path wasn't as lonely as his own. Because even without prophecy, Dorian knew that whichever way he went, he would walk a path in darkness, alone, suffering so much that giving up his visions had seemed a good idea. With fear and trembling, Dorian stood. He looked at the path before him and the path behind, the road to Kaliras and his future wife, Janine. That was her name. Or the road back to his friends. Death and love, or life and loneliness. The god felt as distant as a summer in the freeze. Face set, back straight, Dorian continued his long walk to Kaliras. Goran was always watching Aline. his gaze dark, intense. The first day, that hadn't been a problem because she hadn't needed to relieve herself. The second day, it had. Aline had followed him a short distance into the woods, then stepped behind a bush for some privacy. He waited until she was squatting and lifting her skirts, and then followed her just to shame her. Of course, she couldn't go. That night, as they did each night and each morning, the Caladorans prayed. Goran threw Aline to the ground and straddled her.
Kalivas. Kalivos razan mi. Kalimi virtu rapt. Reku virtu defite.
He ground his fingers into the pressure points behind her ears. She screamed and felt warm wetness soak her dress as she lost control of her bladder. When the prayer was finished, Goran got up and clouted her ears.
You stink, filthy bitch.
They didn't let her wash when she crossed a small mountain stream. When Goran took her aside that evening, Aline hiked up her skirts and relieved herself as he watched. He took no special delight in watching until she blushed and looked away.
Tomorrow, I'll make you wear shit on your face. Yours or someone else's. Your choice.
Why do you do this? Isn't there anything decent in you?
The next morning, however, they were awakened early. They set out immediately. The captives traveled in a line tied together, walking behind the Caladorans. Aline was sixth in line out of six captives with the young boy, Harold, right in front of her. It took her a while to figure out why the Caladorans were anxious, because they beat the captives if they talked. There were only five Caladoran soldiers this morning. That night, Goran seemed to have forgotten his threat. When he took Aline aside to let her relieve herself, he kept the camp in easy sight. Aline squatted among the tamaracks, which were dropping their golden needles with the onset of autumn, and pretended his presence didn't bother her.
The Meisters might meet up with us tomorrow. We'll hand all of you over then. That bastard Taven probably run off to coward.
Aline stood, and not 10 paces from the oblivious Goran, she saw a man leaning against a tree. The stranger wore a multitude of cloaks, vests, pocketed shirts, and pouches of all sizes, all of them horsehide, all tanned the same deep brown and worn soft from long use. Twin, forward-curving Gurkhas were tucked into the back of his belt. An elaborately scrimshod bow case was slung over his back, and hilts of various sizes hung among the garments. He had an affable face, wry, almond-shaped brown eyes, and loose, straight black hair. A Ymuri stalker. He touched a finger to his lips.
You finished?
Yes.
Aline glanced back to the stalker, but he was gone. There were only 4 soldiers when they camped that night at the edge of the woods to take advantage of the shelter of the trees. The Caladorans quarreled about whether they should press on in the darkness or if Haavan and the other missing man had really run away. The night was short, and Goran woke Aline in the dark of the morning. He took her silently into the woods. She hiked up her skirts like it didn't bother her.
How did your chest get hurt?
That wild bitch stabbed me with a pitchfork after I killed her husband and gutted her brats.
The Goran, eviscerating children, held no special significance. He had hurt Aline and shamed her. She could forgive those, but that dismissive shrug blew on the small spark of fury in her heart. For the first time in her life since Rat, Aline hated. Goran had brought a bow with him, and now he strung it.
This day we get to camp. Nefdada will do terrible things to you. I can save you.
Save me?
What he does should not be done. It is Lodrakari foulness. If you run now, I will put an arrow in your back and spare you.
His mercy was so bizarre that Aline's hatred dissolved. A flash of light burst from the camp 50 paces behind them, throwing shadows against the tree. Aline turned and saw a dozen unfamiliar Caladoran horsemen charging into the camp from the north. They had come early to collect their slaves.
Run!
Through the trees, Aline saw the Ymuri stalker fighting the Caladorans. He cut through 2 of them in a single move. fire leapt from one of the horseman's hands, but he dodged it. Gora nucked an arrow and drew it, but there were too many trees and Caladorans between him and the Ymuri. Then, only paces away, the young boy Harald burst from the woods running away. Gorin turned and aimed, leading his new target. All Aline thought was,
"No!"
She grabbed Gorin's dagger from his belt. The bow dropped from Gorin's fingers, and he and Aline regarded each other, shock widening his eyes. The dagger was lodged squarely in the center of his throat, its wide blade blocking his windpipe. His blood sprayed over Aline. Despite the blood on her face, her dress, and her hands, despite the piteous look on Gorin's face and the horror of watching a man die, Aline didn't feel sorry. She had hated Gorin only a minute before, but she hadn't killed him out of hatred. If she could have the moment back, she'd do the same thing. And just like that, she understood.
My God! What a fool I've been! Forgive me, Kyla!
With magic bursting in the woods behind her, setting the trees alight, Aline ran. On the north side of Voss Island, in the gloom of the rainy autumn day, Kyla stood staring at the unmarked cairn he'd built, Durzo's grave. Kyla was spattered with blood, his wet boy gray scored and singed with magic. In a rage, he'd fought for hours, killing every Caladoran soldier and meister he laid eyes on. From the slowly diminishing magic on the throne room's floor, he'd seen Logan stand, seen the Ferali turn, and witnessed the destruction of the Caladoran army. He'd seen how the men had looked at Logan. Though the figures were tiny, it was written in every line of their bodies. Logan would march his army home, and in 2 days when they arrived, he would find his castle swept out and cleansed of the Caladoran presence. Except for Kali. But that was one creature Kyla was going to steer clear of. Let King Gyre invite some mages to take care of that.
We won, I guess.
Kyla knew there was no use railing against his life. He was the Night Angel, and he didn't get celebrations. As Durzo had told him long ago, he would always be separate, alone.
Oh, it is just so hard to be immortal.
Kyla was too exhausted to be surprised or offended. The Kakari had spoken before, he remembered now, trying to save his life.
So you can talk.
The Kakari puddled into his hand and formed a stylized face. It smiled and winked at him. Kyla sucked it back into his skin. Kyla stared at his stump. He'd lost his arm for nothing. He'd made an oath to the wolf for nothing. Everything Kyla had ever learned, everything he'd ever suffered, had been for one thing. Killing Gareth Ursul was Kyla's destiny. Gareth was the vile fount from which Kyla and Jarl's and Aline's misery flowed. It was only fitting that the man who'd led Kyla to become a wet boy would be Kyla's last debtor. Without Gareth, there would be no Roth. Without Roth, Aline would be unscarred, Jarl would be alive and whole, and Kyla would be... what? Well, not a wet boy. Count Drake had once told Kyla,
"There's a divinity that shapes beauty from our rough-hewn lives."
It was a lie, as Kyla's destiny was a lie. Perhaps that was why this was so hard. He'd begun to believe in Aline's divine economy, so now he hadn't just lost Aline, who'd been part of him from the beginning, who'd made Kyla believe good things about himself. He'd also lost his destiny. If he had a destiny, he had a purpose. Some pearl being built around the evil he'd suffered and inflicted. If he'd been shaped for a purpose, maybe there was a shaper. If there was a shaper, perhaps its name was the One God. And perhaps that One God was a bridge over the chasm between killer and saint that separated Kyla from Aline. But there was no bridge, no god, no shaper, no purpose, no destiny, no beauty. There was no going back. He'd been cheated of justice and vengeance and love and purpose at once. He thought he could change, that he could buy peace for the price of an old sword, but retribution was only an instrument of justice. was Kyler who thirsted to meet it out. He'd killed many men today, and he couldn't make himself feel sorry for it. This was what it was to be the Night Angel. Perhaps a better man could lay down the sword. Kyler could not. Not even though it had cost him Aline. Every time he thought of Aline, her face morphed into V's. Every time he thought of V, his fantasies morphed from meeting out punishment to fantasies of another kind.
Master, I don't know what to do.
Finish the job.
It was true. The wolf had fulfilled his part of the deal. Kyler had to come back from death immediately. It turned out to be a lousy trade, but a deal was a deal, so Kyler would go steal Kurok and ride to Taurus Bend and get his arm back. It sounded simple enough. After all, stealing wasn't hard when you could make yourself invisible. It wouldn't be a second too soon to get his arm back, either. His stump was aching, and he wouldn't have thought it, but losing a hand threw off his balance.
You're not here because you don't know what to do, boy. You always knew what to do.
That was true, too. Kyler would do his job and then go find V and kill her.
Oh, you won't kill her.
Chatty all of a sudden, aren't you?
The Kakari didn't answer. It was right, though. Kyler wasn't here for direction. Not really. He just missed his master. It was the first time he'd been to the grave since Durzo had died. Tears started flowing, and Kyler knew only that they were tears of loss. He'd lost his master. He'd lost the girl he betrayed his master to save. He'd lost his master's daughter. He'd lost his one chance at a peaceful life. Mild-mannered herbalist. It had been a sweet delusion, maybe, but it had been sweet. Kyler was lonely, and he was tired of being lonely. A gopher had dug a hole near the foot of Durzo's cairn. Durzo would be pissed if he had to spend eternity with gophers pawing his corpse. Kyler looked at the hole, irritated. It was deep enough that, to normal eyes, the hole would just appear black. But Kyler saw a distinct metallic glimmer at the bottom. He got on his knees and his stump. And shifted to his elbow. And reached it. He stood with a small, sealed metal box in one hand. One word was etched on it.
Azoth?
It sent a shiver through him. How many people knew that name? Kyler cracked it open awkwardly between his stump and one hand. There was a note inside.
Hey, I thought it was my last one, too. He said I got one more for old time's sake.
Kyler's eyes blurred. He couldn't believe it. The letter went on, but his eyes were drawn to the final words.
Make no deals with the wolf.
The letter was dated a month after Kyler had killed his master. Durzo was alive. The Night Angel Trilogy, Shadow's Edge, Part 2, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Brent Weeks. Published by arrangement with Hatchet Book Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Hazelford, Tim Getman, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Rick Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Toison. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith, Johann Detweiler, Jack Francis, and Pierre Gerwin Langer. If you enjoyed the Night Angel trilogy, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Deunero.
Yes, Deunero. Master Deunero.
You are discredited. The church has seen the truth.
Your truth.
All the world knows the truth of Avalyn now, and of Giuseppine, who is queen.
All the world believes the lies, but I will teach them the truth. Yes, I shall. Donovan Dyer! Elbrion, Nightbird, Father, I would do battle with you. Come forth and face me.
I have just come from Abbot Owan, and from the kitchens of Castle Ursel before that. Was it not enough for you to keep me barren? Did you have to go after my very life in addition?
You have been poisoning my food.
You speak nonsense. You do not know.
I know. And so also will King Danube, unless...
Unless?
Unless Constance Pimplebury takes her leave of Castle Ursel.
My king! Do you wish to take part in our games?
I do, my king.
And what is your name and title?
I am Tyme Aquilic of Hunt the Bear.
I have murdered! The queen has slain me!
This is insanity!
Don't miss the shocking conclusion of the Demon Wars Saga Book 5, Ascendance, Part 2. Available now in graphic audio.
The Maelstrom has begun.
Available now in graphic audio.
How far you reckon we are from St. Louis?
I'll be there in another week just about, I'd say.
That arm of yours gonna be good and healed up by then?
It's pretty much healed now. I can use it without any trouble. Just aches a little every now and then.
You best be careful with it. You want to be at full strength when we get there. Killing that bastard Beaumont ain't going to be easy.
No, but it sure is going to be satisfying.
Party! Everybody, hunch cover!
Hey, Dugan, don't you reckon it's about time you tell me what we're doing here?
Hear that?
Yeah, what is it?
Steamboat round the bend. When it gets here, that's when the shooting starts.
Beaumont! I'm coming for you, Beaumont, you goddamn coward! I'm gonna skin you alive!
The First Mountain Man 16, Preacher's Fire. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.